something due any day. I will know right away, soon as it shows. It'd make 'em cannonballing down through the sky, gleaming its eye bright as a rose. It's only just out of reach, down the block on a beach, under a tree. I got a feeling there's a miracle due, gonna come through, coming to me. Could it be? Yes, it could. Something's coming, something good, if I can wait. Something's coming, I don't know what it is, but it is gonna be great. With a click, with a shock, phone'll jingle, door'll knock, open the latch. Something's coming, don't know when, but it's soon. Catch the moon, one-handed catch. Around the corner, or whistling down the river. Come on. It'll be there. Come on, something, come on in. Don't be shy, meet a guy, pull up a chair. The air is humming, and something great is coming. Who knows? It's only just out of reach, down the block on a beach. Maybe tonight, maybe tonight, maybe tonight.
Maybe, stay tuned, who knows? I don't know, it could be because the sunlight isn't so slanty lately. Yeah, it must be because of this time of year. I've been asking myself, how much do my expectations match up with whatever is coming? How much does what I expect help me be ready for whatever it is? And how much does what I expect determine what I get? Or determine how I feel about what I get. I mean, single digits in April, for instance, not what I expected, and a lot harder to take than single digits in January. What do you expect? What do you expect? What do you expect? What do you expect? Tonight on Stay Human, expect some stories about what's coming. Being just at that point where it's all turning up to the new thing while we're sitting here at the top of the world. Lead off with some music by a local hero.
Was in the spring. went to the station down in the yard. I hit me a freight train, work done got hard. Now she's gone, but I'm sitting on time.
This time every year, I see myself flinging an old pair of boots into Lake Michigan. The heels were down to almost nothing. The leather, which I never even thought of properly treating, was cracked and caked with a winter's abuse. They were ugly, and they were heavy on my feet. I'd worn them every day through my first winter in Chicago. The blackened snow was now reduced to scattered icy islands. It was March or maybe early April, I think. I know I was sitting on some rocks on the shore of Lake Michigan, the city at my back. Before me, on a first warm day, the vast lake and sky. It was the sunlight, more than the mild temperature, that made me feel like my cells were waking up, and not only to a return of spring, but into something brand new, a spring such as the world had never seen. I was on a cosmic cusp. I had just turned 17 years old. I remember that day, I think, the black boulders I sat on, the blue lake, the brown boots, arcing into the sky, one, two, landing shallower than I expected, but still disappearing forever under the rippling water. But there's a problem with this memory. The lake was at least a mile from the dormitory I lived in. If I'd walked back barefoot, slippery rocks, broken sidewalks, patches of slush and broken glass, surely I would remember that. Maybe I brought along a pair of sneakers for the walk back. That could be, except that would mean I had gone to the lake specifically to ritualize the end of winter by throwing garbage boots into the lake, something a full-of-himself 17-year-old might do, but I can't remember that part. The image of the moment is lit by spontaneity, by that sudden expansiveness of the infinite sky, the lake, the earth leaning closer to the sun in its great orbit, the boots suddenly flying through the air. No, I'm sure I didn't have the idea to do it until the moment I did it, which means I didn't bring sneakers along, and I didn't walk back barefoot, which would mean I never threw those boots into Lake Michigan. I must have imagined it so vividly that for all these years since, all this time, I've had a memory of something that never happened. Or maybe it did. I can't remember. In the weeks right after the spring equinox, the world opens up like the petals of a flower, possibility endless. It's almost like being 17 years old. And every spring, for me, whether it really happened or not, there are boots in the sky, and that sky goes on forever.
feel so lazy, can't do a thing. My mind is hazy, just like a smoke ring. I think of nothing but lying in the hay. I got the spring fever blue. The sun is shining right in my room. I feel like I was a man in the moon. I'm riding high on the clouds, way up above. I got the spring fever blue. I wish that spring were back again to satisfy my lazy end. I miss those days of dreaming. If birds were nestling in the trees and leaves were swaying with the breeze, my heart would keep on beaming. Oh, I hope the south wind blows past my door and leaves me someone whom I can adore. I think of nothing but love and romance. I got the spring fever blues. I mean, I've got the spring fever blues.
I decided to cheer myself up the other day by calling some old friends I hadn't seen much during the winter and asking them, what are you most looking forward to when spring finally comes?
Oh. That sounds like a good question. I would say the smells of green and growing things in the soil. So I love the smells in the spring. That's what I most look forward to.
The couple little things poking out, and then wood anemones and the hepatica, all the early little flowers that seem to break through before everybody else.
Seeing the buds on my Juneberry bushes, they're pink flowers.
The first hint of the fabulous green.
Burning. I've been decluttering. It's become a thing for me because if I died today, my daughter would be so mad at me because she'd have to do everything. So I'm doing this thing, so I'm getting rid of stuff. And there's certain things that you just have to burn. I have this perch at the top of my stairs where I look out, and at night, right before I go to bed, I look out and watch the sky and look out at my little forest view, and I think I really have to burn things because that you can recycle to your heart's content, but there's certain things you have to burn. I mean, there just is. I mean, I just want to burn some stuff.
First and foremost, the lack of ice. Because I have more than my fair share of it. And we're not talking on the lake either. I'm talking about walkways and driveways and, you know, your normal routes to feed the birds that are deadly.
I'm looking forward to things coming back to life, you know, just any signs of life, you know, like name it. A little green would be nice, but maybe some flowers would be good. A variety of birds coming back. So I can look at them and lake opening up and watching the critters come in there.
Thanks to Tom Cobb, Julie Crabb, Steph Hunter, Carolyn King, and Cloud Ottman for those thoughts. And I hope that you are thinking hard about what you're looking forward to seeing in spring. Make it happen.
Wish that spring were back again to satisfy my lazy end. I'll miss those days of dreaming. If birds were nestling in the trees and leaves were swaying with the breeze, my heart would keep on beaming. Oh, I hope the south wind blows past my door and leaves me someone whom I can adore. I think of nothing but love and romance. I've got the spring fever blues.
Timbuk3. You're tuned to your Northern Community Radio Service, KAXE, KBXE. Our program is called Stay Human. I'm Michael Goldberg. We want to thank the listener members of Northern Community Radio whose contributions keep us on the air, and also thanks to the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, which provides support for this and other local programming on Northern Community Radio. Today on Stay Human, we're taking a moment to appreciate that moment just before whatever's going to happen next, our great expectations. Coming up, we'll have a story from Robert Jevney about how being 10 years old is like clinging to the edge of the roof. What do you expect?
Slimmer than three. Moving and shaking and making it happen. Producing and singing while people was trapping. Chasing a dream and living for free. A whole lot of people helped the hell out of me. A job ain't a move, I'm just a musician. I followed the path, continued the mission. I got soul and a whole lot of songs. I get love even if I'm dead wrong. And I know that I got what I need, even when I don't got what I want. Cause I ain't really got.
I want to have a closet that you can like live in, like one of them houses, like 4 or 5 bedrooms.
Ooh, the 4 or 5 bedroom, girl, that look good.
And this old couch too for now. I wanted to get the eye surgery too, you know, cause my eyes, I can't see, and I don't like putting contacts in. I want to get the eye surgery.
Yeah, sunroof, yeah. I want it all.
Earl St. Clair ain't got it like that. Here's Ahmad Jamal with his take on George Gershwin. Ahmad Jamal ain't necessarily so. Area writer Robert Jevney, who also produces Wordish, heard on Monday mornings here on Northern Community Radio, shares with us this story about how a television documentary brought him back to a time of life of great expectation.
I binge-watched the Vietnam War recently. By choice this time. It was hard. It made me sad. I was 10 in 1968 and fully saturated in the wild kingdoms of baseball and comic books, KO and bubblegum, war movies too, and I saw some of the clips of the real thing on the news, vaguely aware of the difference, like an itch. I was too old not to be aware of adult reactions to the war and too young to know what was going on. My oldest brother came back from Vietnam sometime around then. My brother, who had spent a summer working at the Ovaltine factory in town, making fiddle faddle and poppycock, my brother, who was more of a hero to me for bringing home huge bags of reject product, as if there were such a thing, than for shipping overseas, he had been gone for a year, maybe more, which is basically forever when you're little. My one and only sister was the first to jump out of the Delta 88 at the airport when we picked him up, and my brother, not knowing whom he was swinging just then, swung my sister just then, thinking she was my soon-to-be sister-in-law. and laid a kiss maybe meant for another. My sister stepped aside, crying, which she might have done anyway, and turned beet red, and my sister-in-law stepped in. I thought it was a little awkward. I don't know if my brother knew this, but my sister had cooties. I was at the rear of the family crowd, basically staring at Butts, but eventually he noticed the youngest of his little brothers and ruffled the piney crest of my buzz cut and made me happier than my poor oversensitive self was prior to the ruffling. I don't remember a lot of the specifics of the war or my brother from then, except that my dad would swivel the Amana console TV toward the formal dining room and his spot at the head of the table so he could watch the latest and twist his jaw muscles into knots over all of it. I couldn't see the TV from where I sat, so I knew little. Otherwise, my dad was off to work while I worked on my layups against the crude backboard and rim tacked to the garage at the rear of the house. There was a little asphalt patio of sorts, not nearly big enough to turn around the Delta 88, but big enough for basketball or the occasional driveway parties my folks would host featuring Glenn Miller and Buddy Murrow, Chinese lanterns, and liver pate. I would face my fear of heights and sneak out of my bedroom window onto the addition roof and look down on old people dancing in the false twilight. And except for a guy named Bob Dobie, whom we all considered a freak because of the giant, curly, reddish-blonde puffball he called hair, and also because he carved a pentagram into one of his palms with a knife and got into a fight with a greaser right there in CCD, a decisive intrusion into childhood daydreams. If not for that, I might have stayed just there pre-Bob Dobie, turning inward, living with the dissonance, with the romance and the apocalyptic narcissism, because it scared me. A little like the irrational fear I felt on the roof of my house getting a glimpse into another world. I had learned at least to accept some scary things, even if all of it bewildered me and made me feel stupid and left behind and staring at the butts of giants crowding around a news source or left me clinging to a roof edge.
Sweeping exits. Oh.
Alicia Keys on Stay Human with that beautiful version of the Keith Richards song. Here's a cheerful little tune. It's a new one from the Decembrists.
Everything, 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 everything is awful. Oh, everything, 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 everything is awful. Everything is awful. Everything is awful.
Kind of makes you want to sing along, doesn't it? Everything is awful. That's actually something that I have a hard time with in my efforts to stay human. Excess negativity. Actually, I was relieved when I read about cognitive scientists discovering and describing what they say everybody has. That's a basic part of the way that we think. They call it a negativity bias. Dissatisfactions at work, say a broke down air conditioner and it's way too hot, that kind of thing takes up a lot more of your attention and your energy than things that are going right, say a working air conditioner or heater, and it's just fine. We're always stung by criticism much more than we are encouraged by praise. Even our language has more words for negative emotions than for positive ones. And scientists have determined that we tend to assume that an expert who's critical of something is more trustworthy, probably smarter too, than someone who praises something. A friend of mine who ran a big advertising agency once explained American politics to me very simply, and this was decades before the current trouble that we're in. He said, every 2 years, there's a whole lot of money spent on political advertising. And at least half of that advertising says our current leaders are corrupt, stupid, dishonest, or all three. Every 2 years, the electorate is bombarded with this message in every possible medium. And you know what? Advertising works. The negativity bias is seemingly a biological attribute, part of the way our brains organize information. It's not just a function of our society or our political system. And you can see where this bias might have adaptive value, be a trait that would make it likelier for you to live to have children. I mean, just think of negativity bias as a function of driving. That driver up there, he's liable to pull right out into traffic. You take your foot off the gas without even consciously registering that you're prepared for the worst. It's a good thing, too, considering how other people drive. So it's tough between the usefulness of the negativity bias and its universality. It can be tough to make the case for optimism, even though most of the people in the world live longer and healthier lives. They actually do. We eat tastier and more varied foods, have more choices, wider knowledge of the world, greater opportunity than we did even 50 years ago, more than we could have imagined 150 years ago. Yeah, but you're a white guy. Yeah, but Chinese workers. Yeah, but opioid epidemic. Yeah, but climate change. Yeah, but I can hear it like a thousand doors all being slammed shut, the constant echo of yeah, but. And then, in addition to the negativity bias that we all share, there are differences among us of what we still call temperament. We call it that because really we don't know how brain chemistry works. We don't know what triggers which genes or how exactly early brain formation sets the patterns. So we just call it temperament. But whatever you call it, every parent knows that their kids are born with their own and that it seems to be just part of the deal, part of who they are. And some of us seem to be naturally inclined to look on the bright side. It can be insufferable to those of us not so inclined. I get annoyed at my wife when she dismisses whatever it is I'm worrying about at the moment with some kind of, it'll all work out. Or even worse, what good does it do to worry about it? But I gotta admit, it was a pretty darn smart move on my part for me to make my life with somebody who balances, offsets my tendency to accentuate the negative. So I'm trying to overcome, or at least keep from spreading, my negativity bias. I'm spending less time tracking the daily news and more time playing with children. They always seem to expect the best. It strikes me that there are two very different kinds of optimism, and it's worth paying attention to which one is which. There is what I would call passive optimism. It says, it'll all work out in the end. If it's not working out, that just means it's not yet the end. Passive optimism is what inspires somebody to buy lottery tickets when they buy gas, even though, yeah, but, still, they think you never know, somebody's going to win. A child reaching for a brightly wrapped birthday gift is filled with optimism. It could be anything, something spectacular, the best thing ever. But this is a passive optimism. That same kid might be just as wildly optimistic when she or he scavenges up some boards, a hammer and nails, and sets out to build a treehouse. It's going to be a splendid palace or an impenetrable secret fortress. This is the optimism that I aspire to. It's not passive, it's active, imaginative, creative optimism, which, come to think of it, is the optimism that has, in fact, led to all of the human activity, scientific, social, political, and commercial, that are the reasons we now live longer, have more choices, breathe cleaner air than our grandparents did. And this is where this question of negativity bias and optimism goes beyond our individual mental health. It goes way past merely recognizing what our temperaments might be or even trying actively to keep negativity from enslaving us. This optimism, the one that leads us to pick up the hammer and nails, the optimism that lets us believe what we can imagine we can create, that what we do will not be undone. This optimism, I think, is an obligation, a duty that we all have to ourselves and to each other. You know, some mornings, my first waking thought is, no, I'm not getting up. But even on those days, so far at least, I do eventually get out of bed, find some clothes, wake up and smell the coffee. What can I do today? That's David Byrne, Everybody's Coming to My House. We're only tourists, he sings. And I think that's so. Might as well enjoy the trip, no? I'm Michael Goldberg. With thanks to Robert Jevney, Steph Hunter, Linda Ottman, Julie Crabb, Carolyn King, and Tom Cobb for being part of the show today. I'm a volunteer here at Northern Community Radio, producing Stay Human for Sunday night broadcasts, which I gotta tell you, takes some serious optimism to promise to come up with another show for next week. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoy it, maybe feel a little bit encouraged by it, or at least a little bit ready for what comes next, because an awful lot of it depends on what do you expect. Here's the way Ms. Lauren Hill lays it out.
We about to step in.
Practice extending across the atlas. I begat this, flipping in together on the dirty mattress. You can't match this, rapper slash actress. More powerful than two Cleopatras. Bomb graffiti on the tomb of Nefertiti. MCs ain't ready to take it to the Serengeti. My rhymes is heavy like the mind of Sister Betty. El Boogie spars with stars and constellations. Then came down for a little conversation. Adjacent to the king, fear no human being. Roll with cherubims to Nassau Coliseum. Now hear this mixture with hip hop meets scripture. Develop a negative into a positive picture.
Now everything is everything.
Sometimes it seems
we'll touch that dream.
We'll touch that
but
dream.
Things come slow and not at all.
They come slow, yeah.
And the ones on time,
won't make it stop.
So convinced that they might fall.
Let's love ourselves and we can't fail.
After winter,
must come spring.